You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Eye on the Ball. I'm Steve Rivera alongside Jay Gonzalez, and you're listening to 1030 The Voice. Welcome to Tuesday afternoon. Lots going on locally and nationally, obviously. How are you, Jay?
I'm doing good. Off a day of golf. A little shout out to my son, Adam, who's it's his 27th birthday.
Oh, nice.
So I bought him some golf, and we went out to Crooked Stick. I keep calling it Crooked Tree, Crooked Stick. He's in really good shape. It's a the county muni that opened, and they'd been closed for a while, and the course is in great shape, so I'd encourage people to get out there and give it a shot.
Well,
it was in really good shape.
We need to know how you did.
Bad and good. I should give you my history. Long ago, when I was actually a decent golfer, I shot 52 on the front and 38 on the back one time, so that was, you know, I can't explain that. Well, it went 51-43 today, so it was similar. I played awful on the front and then got it together on the back.
Money had to be on the line.
I lost a lot of money today because there were four of us, and I lost money to all the other three guys.
Yeah, younger kids, I'm sure.
They are. You know, they play a different game than I do. You know, it's gotten really bad. I'm playing old man golf, and you know, I used to be a regular. Where I was, I used to hit a 7-iron, 150 yards. I'm down to about 130 with a 7-iron, you know. And we were playing on a one of the par 3 holes, and it was a 160-yard hole, and I was hitting a 5-iron, and the other guys were hitting pitching wedges. So, I don't know. It's a different game for me.
What do they say? A bad day of golf beats a...
I'm not complaining because it was a lot of fun. We got out early. It was nice and cool for about 15 minutes. And then, you know, we had a good time. It was fun. And I loved getting out there. And like I said, the course was in great shape, and it's just nice to get out and get some steps in.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, a lot of things going on. NBA has some news. We talked to Sean Miller today for the first time since March, I think it was. The local media, I was on the call today. A lot of interesting and not so interesting stuff. Kind of, as you know, Sean talks along on questions.
Right, and you know, there's some pieces of what he said that I think will be interesting to fans. And we've cut up the news conference and pulled out some what we think are some key moments of the news conference, and we'll play those and comment
them.
On those.
Yep.
and talk about them. And I thought there was some really interesting stuff that he had to say. Again, we don't, you know, partly because of what's going on right now, you know, we don't get an opportunity to hear from these guys. So when we do, we want to give everybody a chance to take a look at that. Would love to have people call in and talk about that. 520-790-2040. But we're going to have some Sean Miller clips in the second segment after the 6:15 break.
So do you know what you're doing in mid-October?
Hopefully, I'm watching football and baseball.
You could be watching
day.
NBA basketball.
Probably some NBA basketball.
That's at least by right now on June 2nd, because it's always changing. Tomorrow will change again. That's when the finals are projected.
Wow. So it's, you know, there's going to be a lot of sports going on, you know, all at once.
You figure.
College football is going to probably start. The NFL is going to be going. The NBA is going to be going. The NHL is hoping to get their playoffs going. Everything's in baseball. Well, if you take those five things, and which one I think is the least likely to happen,
baseball.
It's baseball.
Because of money.
Because those guys just can't get their act together.
Right. Yeah, no question. It's going to be a weird fall if we get to see all those things. Probably no fans.
No fans of a lot of that stuff. You know, we know the PGA Tour is going to start next Thursday, and they're not going to have any fans.
You were a little early, too.
I was early. Darn it, man. I kept thinking it was this Thursday. It's
but
next
you were,
Thursday.
You were so excited.
I'm still excited. So, you know, I've gone back over the last few days and rewatched pieces of the broadcast they had of the final round of the Masters that Tiger won last year. But, you know, they're going to start a week from Thursday. Again, no fans, and I think the first several tournaments are going to have no fans, but you know, we'll lead into some of the majors coming up, and so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, so a lot of things coming up. We just have to wait.
Right. We
sit
just got to wait. We're getting there. We're gaining on it, but every day, and you keep hearing different plans about the different sports and stuff like that, but something's going to happen. It's July, you know. You figure it's early June right now.
The dog days.
We're going to have a little bit of stuff in June, but by July, there should be plenty of stuff going on.
Right, right. Something to watch and give you
right,
hope.
Right, right.
Yeah, should be fun. I'm looking forward to maybe getting your thoughts on something that Sean said. I was on the call, like I said. But I wanted to ask you yesterday. We talked at length, I guess, with Coach Harvey about what was going on socially out in the real world of this pandemic, plus the riots and things like that. Where do you stand on athletes, big athletes, going out there and helping out with the protest and or peaceful protest?
I think when an athlete has a platform like that, and particularly some of the minority athletes that are out there and have and have a position, I think it's great when they state those positions publicly and kind of set an example. I mean, a lot of people want to minimize what athletes do and what athletes know, but you got to remember, a lot of these athletes are college graduates. Mm-hmm. They're not dumb guys, and they're not, you know, they're not guys who are just sitting around playing basketball or playing football or baseball or whatever they're doing. They're out there, they have kids, they have families, they're in their communities, they're doing stuff in their communities. They're probably way more involved than the average person who would tell them to stick to dribbling or stick to sports.
And we've heard that before.
Yeah. You know, somebody like LeBron James, who's done so much for his communities, you know, when he comes out and says stuff, I think people ought to listen because they're out there in the middle of stuff that we don't see every day. So I think it's great when they come out and take a stand, state a position, and you know what, even if you don't agree with their position, at least listen. And that's the problem. That's one of the big problems we have, is people aren't listening to each other.
Well, Steve Kerr, you know, does it almost daily.
I love Steve because, you know, Steve, the things that he says, you can tell he's put some thought into. Now, and a lot of times he does it in a sort of a humorous way, because he states the obvious, but it's like, guys, this is so obvious, it's funny.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, you get him, I get him, but people who don't get him, don't get him.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense, because I think we know him a little better than, Joe Schmo out, you know, in somewhere
so they don't
in
get the
Midwest. They don't get the humor or the way he approaches things, and we do. But, I love the stuff that Steve tweets, because, again, he's a guy who's smart guy, been around the block a number of times.
Politically, his dad was, politics.
His entire family is incredibly educated, so it's a really smart family, and a lot of the stuff he says is well thought out, and I think he's somebody that, you know, we ought to pay attention to.
Part of the question is what I ask is, back in my youth, and your youth obviously too, Michael Jordan didn't talk about stuff like this.
Michael Jordan didn't talk about stuff, Tiger Woods didn't talk about stuff, and there were a lot of people like that, and you've kind of felt that they didn't, because they were protecting their financial situation. You know,
To me, that's not a criticism.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
But I think there have been ways for them to get out there and make statements and do it within the context of what their business is. Because you're right, you don't want to destroy your business by saying something. But on the other hand, you know, Nike, who they were both attached to, you know, famously, I mean, they've pretty much made Nike. You know, work with Nike and come out with, you know, statements and things that, you know, make sense. And there's ways to do that. So I have been disappointed in the past with those two guys. But, you know, they both came out and made statements in the last few days about the stuff going on with the George Floyd tragedy. So, you know, they're doing more.
Yeah.
More. But I think it's a good thing that athletes do that.
Right, right. And they're really doing it more and more, because even with the younger ones, for sure.
They are. You know, and somebody made the point that this generation, I think Steve Kerr, I was just reading a tweet from Steve Kerr saying that this generation coming up, not ours, because we've messed this up really bad, but the next generation is probably going to be the most tolerant and well-versed generation on handling racism, because you can see that the young kids, to them, the inherent racism isn't as strong as it is with our generation.
No, I agree. Messed up is strong, but I totally agree with that too. Hey, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back and dissect Sean Miller's press conference today. Come back here on 10:30 The Voice. Hey, welcome back to Wearing the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera alongside Jay Gonzalez. So Jay, of all the sports you just talked about maybe 3 minutes ago, what are you most looking forward to? College football?
College football. I'm a college football guy, and so I'm just hoping that this is all gonna get started in whatever form it's gonna get started in, and the NFL. Football season is my favorite time of the year. I don't watch as much regular season college basketball as I do college football. I mean, my weekends revolve around football when we hit the fall. I start paying to college basketball. Well, I work all the U of A games, mm-hmm. so I do see all of those. But in terms of just what's going on in college basketball, I really don't start paying attention to wins and losses and conference races and stuff like that till we get closer to March and you're starting to talk about who's going to be in the tournament and who's not and that type
so,
of stuff.
So we had Yogi Roth here 10 days ago or mm-hmm. so, yes, like last week. He brought up a great point. We hadn't even thought of it. Yesterday, there was a tweet out of Marshall. I don't know if you saw that. Did you see that?
No.
Two football players have been diagnosed or tested positive for COVID-19. Imagine if two players from each team.
Right.
It'll throw everything into a tizzy.
Well, it will. But, you know, one of the things that is being figured out is what do you do if somebody on your team gets the virus? You isolate them, you test the other guys, do they have it, do they not have it, you know, those kinds of things. Those are things that are still being formulated right now.
Right.
So because they don't have to know the answers to that right now, we don't know what that is. We don't know what's going to, you know, how you're going to handle if all of a sudden you got a locker room and a guy's got it. What are you going to do? So I think that what's going to happen over the next couple of months is they're going to have to figure out what does happen. Mm-hmm. They're working on that, you know, as we speak. Again, you know, this is that thing that we keep talking about, how what we know today is far short of what we're going to know tomorrow, next week, a month from now, 2 months from now. So I don't think we have an answer of what's going to happen if somebody in your locker room, you know, gets the virus. You know, who, what do you do?
Yeah,
I don't think they know that yet.
And that's I don't even know if that's a worst case scenario, but that is a scenario.
It is a scenario. It's a scenario that all of a sudden, you know, okay, and maybe all of a sudden, you know, one guy has it and now you have an outbreak in your locker room. Is your season over?
Then what? Right.
Yeah.
Then
is your season over? So I just don't think that we know yet what that's going to look like when somebody on a team, you know, gets the virus.
Right. And that's
because it's going to happen.
I was going to say, you don't know until you get there.
Right.
But you have to prepare to get there.
It's going
to
happen because we don't have a vaccine for it. So somebody's going to get it. And so somebody's going to have to figure out what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they're trying to figure out what to do when that does happen.
Right. Everyone's optimistic. So, I mean, that's if you, like I say on the show a number of times, you can always have hope. You can never not have hope.
Right.
And see what happens. Because what is today? The 2nd, July, August. So in the real world, they'll be here full-fledged by late July, early August.
Right.
Start to report.
Camps, you know, camps need to generally start late July, first week of August. You know, NFL camps start even sooner than that.
Right.
So, you know, again, the NFL is a different deal because they're not going to have fans in the seats, but you're still going to have players. You know, you can isolate the players.
Right.
And if they isolate the players and that time, they have a little more control over it than trying to isolate a bunch of college students who are going to be going out, hanging out somewhere, you know, and again, these players are going to have to take it serious and understand, you know what, as much as we won a game, I want to go over to Dirt Bags or University Boulevard mm-hmm. or do whatever. I can't for the good of the team, mm-hmm. for the good of the program. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they do that.
Right. No, it's a tough time. We're trying to get ready here for some quotes from Sean. He was very, you know, just an observation. I've been around him about 11 years now, and he was very good today, very mellow. Of course, it's not December,
right?
We're in first part of June, so he was great with his answers, and we'll see.
It's good to hear from, you know, it's good to hear from these guys. So I think we've got some clips queued up. Steve came out of the box with the question about Sean Miller's international recruiting, and I thought there were some interesting things about that. So let's play the clip and then we'll discuss a little bit.
Well, I would say about 2 years ago, Steve, you try to always take inventory of, you know, what you do that works and things maybe that we can do better. And then obviously taking into account the landscape of the industry that we're all in. And, you know, college basketball obviously is the one we're talking about. And I just think there's so many great examples of either singular international players that have come over here and made a big impact. Sometimes it's on one team. Sometimes it's for their entire career. Then you have programs that have just done it well, not just in a single season, but for a long period of time. Obviously, Gonzaga really comes to mind, me being here for over a decade and competing against Gonzaga. You know, I think it's one of the ingredients that makes them such a successful program, that they don't rely on just one aspect of recruiting. You know, they've gotten some great four-year transfers, players that have actually sat out and then impacted, you know, their program. You know, Kyle Wilcher is an example of that. Clearly, the international players, some which, you know, hit the ground running, but others that have developed within their program and, you know, almost become like the fabric of Gonzaga, right? And then obviously you have high school recruiting in our country, and then, you know, most recently you have the internet, you have the eligible immediately transfers. So I think for us, especially when Jack Murphy came aboard, because, you know, Jack has the passion to recruit international, he has the contacts and I think the know-how, it just made sense. And sometimes it takes about a year or so for you to see the results, but we set out as far back as a couple of years to mix it in and make it a part of what we do. You know, I think each year is different, obviously, because we signed only one player in the fall class, Dalen Terry, this past year. And then you never really know how many you're going to lose when you bring in four freshmen, three of them that leave. You know, all of a sudden now you have a lot of need. And, you know, thank goodness we had cultivated that. And I think that the players, the young guys will be coming in, will be great additions to our program, and we welcome them with open arms. And I think that at the end of the day, the class that we put together is a very good one. It's just like you said, this year it's maybe a little bit more heavy towards international. That also doesn't mean next year we're going to bring in, you know, four or five international players, maybe one, maybe none, I don't know. But I think being able to pull from different aspects of recruiting takes a lot of pressure off of especially a program like ours, that oftentimes we need to call on four, five, six new players from one season to the next.
So, Jay, what did you get from that?
Well, first of all, he's been thinking about this track of recruiting international players for a little while now.
Right, right.
And so that was the first thing. But the thing that fascinated me more than anything was his citing of Gonzaga as a model for Arizona recruiting. That you know, and I get it. You know, Gonzaga's been really good. I mean, I sat there, I worked the Sweet 16 and the Final Four that they went to. They've been to a Final Four more recently than Arizona, but it just strikes me that here's a blue blood or an elite Division I program that's sort of modeling itself and its recruiting after a mid-level program. Mm-hmm. Now, Gonzaga is the exception. I get they're from a mid-major conference,
but they've arrived.
But they're here.
They're arrived.
And they're here,
yeah,
to stay. And Mark Few's done a great job,
right,
there. And I'll tell you, when I went to that Sweet 16, and that was the one where Arizona lost Xavier in the Sweet 16, Gonzaga was there. Arizona wasn't going to, even if Arizona had beaten, if that shot by Alonzo Trier had gone in, and Arizona's in the Elite Eight, they weren't going to beat Gonzaga.
Right. And they were higher seed at
the time. No, Gonzaga was the one, Arizona was the two, okay, in that. They weren't going to beat Gonzaga. And the reason they weren't going to beat Gonzaga is Gonzaga had a team of a bunch of 22 and 23-year-olds, okay? And Arizona's team was a bunch of children. You know, Larry Markkanen was 19 years old.
Right, so, Raleigh Alkins.
You know, and all those guys. So that's the first thing. The other thing that struck me is when Gonzaga came down here and played last year. Mm-hmm. Mind you, my seat at the scorer's table is closer to the visitor bench. And so I'm there pregame and I'm doing my stuff, and Gonzaga guys walk on the court for their pregame. Those were old men.
Mm-hmm.
They were old men. They were big. They looked physical. And I told my brother Gene, who sits next to me at the table, I said, we have no shot. Arizona's not going to beat these guys. And they didn't.
Yeah.
Arizona, they stayed in the game through most of the game. It looked like they had a chance to win it, but they weren't going to beat those guys because, you know, again, you know, there were a bunch of, on the Arizona side, there were a bunch of kids on the court, and these guys were a bunch of old guys.
Totally agree with you. To get back on the other side, talking more, Sean Miller, thanks.
Time to update those old kitchen cabinets? Call the Window Depot today. The Window Depot is not only the number one warehouse for windows and doors, we now have a great selection of kitchen and bath cabinets at Tucson's best prices. The Window Depot is Tucson's top spot for granite and quartz countertops to finish the new kitchen or the replacement of that old worn out Formica. So call us today at 290-8545 or 622-6430. The Window Depot, windows, doors, granite, and new kitchens.
Hey, welcome back to Wine the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera alongside Jay Gonzalez. So Jay, I got your observation. One of the things is, maybe I didn't ask the question correctly, but I wanted to see how this all materialized. Was it because the United States kids didn't want to come here, or did he kind of use them as the result of no one wanting to come here?
No, I it sounded to me like it was a
work in progress?
Yeah, sort of. Look, I need to get guys that fit my system, and these guys fit my... I just feel like he was trying to do something a little different recruiting-wise.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, I'm not a coach, but my limited knowledge of basketball, it's my opinion that bringing guys in for 1 year to run his system is not working.
Yeah, and that's obvious.
So he's trying to get guys who have... You know, he spent some time in the press conference talking about the experience that these guys get playing the international game. They travel, they go to different countries, it's a different environment that they're learning basketball than the AAU environment that these guys play in here, where they're just running up and down the court and dunking.
Right.
So
right.
It seems to me like he's just trying to get guys that are a better fit for him, combined with, you know, the one and dones that he can get.
Isn't it kind of going back to his days at Xavier?
It might be. It may be.
Getting players again, who are good?
You got to do something different.
Right.
Because
he's stuck.
He's just not getting to where he needs to get to.
Right, right. Okay, that said, there's 13 scholarships on a roster?
There's 13 scholarships, and they got 14 players right now. One of the big question marks is Brandon Williams.
Right.
He's had the knee injury. He has said some stuff that led people to believe that he's looking for a way out. But Sean Miller today said that, you know, as far as he's concerned, Brandon's on the roster. They're working with him. The COVID thing has created some issues because his rehab has not been as normal as it would need to be. And there's a lot of feeling that if they've got one extra guy right now, Brandon Williams is a guy that's not going to be here in the fall. Mm-hmm. But Sean clearly said that don't necessarily assume that. So he had some stuff to say about what's going to happen by the fall, that they've got to be down to 13 players.
Yeah, not necessarily true. You know, the only thing I'd tell you, Bruce, is it's late May. I thought about it, many, many times this spring. If you go back a year ago, we had, I think, three, maybe four things that happened in terms of our roster changing from the Memorial weekend until we began the fall semester. You know, it's, you know, there's different guys that that have some academic work to do. You know, in our case, clearly we're working hard from the international perspective to make sure that we have any problems solved and working there. We have a lot of guys that are home and, you know, working academically and, you know, to establish themselves coming back. But I think when we get through the summer and we show up in the fall, you know, we'll be at 13 scholarship players, and I think that it will all work out. I say that with great confidence. Work out not.
You know, it's something's going to happen. I don't know what.
It's like the COVID thing. It's too early to tell.
It is. You know, and again, college basketball is one of the sports where that's, you know, the fluidity of a roster is very high. And, you know, he mentioned that, you know, last year, that, you know, they hit Memorial Day and still there were four roster moves after that. So he seems confident that something's going to happen. I think he's just trying to make sure that, let's not make assumptions about who's going to be here and who's who's not.
But let's say, also say, let me put you in Williams' shoes, Brandon Williams' shoes. Wouldn't you kind of be ready to say goodbye?
Look,
just in case.
Yeah, I mean, look, if I'm Brandon Williams and I've got this problem with, you know,
roster spots,
and again, remember, as Sean pointed out in the news conference, with Brandon Williams, it's not a knee injury; it's a chronic problem with his knee. And when you hear people talk about what that might be, it's not, you know, he didn't tear an ACL or something like that. He's got a problem with his knee, just physically. He's got a limited amount of time that he's going to be able to play basketball.
All right.
And so if I'm Brandon Williams, I'm thinking hard about whether or not I'm going to stick around and play for another. But then again, if he doesn't play college basketball, who's going to take him?
Right. And that's kind of what came out a month ago or so with Brandon Williams and his discussion on the internet.
Right.
He's looking at options that best suits Brandon Williams.
And that's the best thing to
do.
That's the absolute best thing to do, is to think, what's the right thing for Brandon Williams? And if he says, I got to go because I've got maybe 3 or 4 years to play basketball and I'm going to go get, you know, earn some money, how can you say don't do it?
Exactly. And any fan who says this or that, I wouldn't blame him for a second. You can't.
Exactly. You can't. You know, again, you know, since he was a little kid, he's been thinking about being a professional basketball player. And if playing another year at Arizona really puts at risk his ability to play
at least 1 or 2 years
to play as a pro, then, you know what, then don't do it.
Right.
I've never criticized a guy. Well, I shouldn't say never. There are some guys that have left that you thought, dude, that's not really smart. But, you know, we don't know what their situation is.
Right. So and maybe they just weren't good enough.
Right. And you just hope guys make the decision, the best decision for them.
Well, I'll give you one example right away. Michael Wright. Wright. But he was one of those major betweener guys.
Yeah.
Not big enough for the pros, very good for the college game.
Right. And but, you know, if he stayed another year, his situation wasn't going to change.
Exactly.
So go make the money.
People don't understand that.
You know, but then I think his name, Marcus Williams. Was that?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, God.
What was that guy thinking?
We could spend an hour.
I'm like, that guy shouldn't even been starting at Arizona. He goes to the NBA. And I'm like, dude, okay, you know.
Perfect example.
Right. So, again, you know, you don't know what's best. I mean, you see a guy play and you say, okay, that's an NBA guy. That guy's not.
Right.
You know, in our limited.
We've seen enough of that. Our litmus test of watching people, we know.
I think we have a good idea, you know, but again, you don't know other things like their family situation.
Sure.
Or maybe they hate school or they're not doing well enough in school to stay out. A lot of things go into it that we don't know about.
Sure. That doesn't make them NBA eligible, though, right away. Right. Okay, next clip.
The second clip is Sean Miller talking about getting past the comments that Jason Terry made when the FBI investigation came around.
And I thought it was a great question.
It was.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people who reacted to that day. You know, there's a long line. And you know what? Based on the information that they had, you know, if you had a passion towards the program that we're all a part of now, Arizona basketball, you know, that was a moment you remembered and you're trying to figure it out. To Jason's credit and I guess mine as well, having nothing to do with him eventually becoming an assistant coach here, we repaired that, talked about it, and had a good conversation about it some time ago. And I appreciated at that moment just the thought that he had of reaching out and getting back on the same page. And he didn't need to explain the emotion behind what he said. I think I understood it. And it's one of the things that you appreciate about our program, David, is that there's people that our program matters to them. You know, they want us to do well. They care a great deal about it. And when you care about something, sometimes you can become emotional. But we crossed that bridge a long, long time ago. That had obviously nothing to do with me coming his direction and eventually making him a part of our staff. So I've gotten to know him a lot better. Like you do with all these guys, you know, they're busy, you know, they're NBA players. They have their own careers. You watch them from afar and respect them a great deal, but you don't have a whole lot of interaction. But as Jason's career is winding down, I've gotten a chance to really know him. And I'm thrilled to add him as an assistant coach and really a big, big part of our future.
Let me say this. David Kelly asked a question I thought was a great question. It came, I think, right after mine. And I said to myself, that's a great question. I thought it was an even better answer.
It was a great answer. And you got to give Sean Miller a lot of credit. Look, we criticize Sean for a lot of things. But really, to put his ego aside, you know, for the good of the program, and I mean, I hold grudges. All right, I my friends laugh at me because I tell them that there's a girl that broke up with me in high school. I still have a big problem with.
If you're talking about it, yeah.
You know, I was 17 years old.
And, I'll take. What's your insurance? I'll take it.
I hold grudges, and my family knows that. But you know, to see what Jason Terry basically said, which he basically said in not so many words, that we need to fire Sean Miller.
Yeah.
And for the two of those guys to work through that to the point that they're going to work together, I think you really got to you know, give both guys a hand for that, because you know, that boy, you know, when somebody tells me I think you should be fired, I'm going to have a hard time even being a friend of that person down the road.
When he talked about the emotion and he understood it and yada yada, and it could be coach speak, but I don't believe this is, because he you could tell, and you know, Sean, you've heard him talk.
Right.
Heard him talk. I really believe that was, to me, it was a great answer from Sean.
Yeah. Well, again, I think we've come to know that Sean Miller is, you know, he's very confident in his position and who he is. He didn't have to go get Jason Terry. There are a lot of other guys he could have gone out and gotten, but he felt Jason Terry was a good fit, and he was willing to get past what he said.
I've talked about this a number of times. I think it was a great PR move, great PR for the school, great for the program. They got a guy who knows the culture of Arizona basketball. These kids are dying to be Jason Terry because they want to go to the pros and last some time, so they have some knowledge of who he is and what he can do. And I think the alums are grateful for him.
Well, sure. Well, later on in the press conference, Sean was asked exactly that. You know, what are the things that Jason Terry brings to the program that got you to hire him? And he listed all those things. The players will listen to him because of his career, both as in college and the NBA. You know, it's a boost for the fans who remember Jason Terry, love Jason Terry, and so it's great for the coaching staff. It's great for recruiting, and then on top of everything else, he's got basketball knowledge. And he'll be able to coach. He can coach. He's going to help coach the guards. People forget that his greatest scorer as Jason Terry was, you know, he was a national player. He was a Sports Illustrated National Player of the Year his senior year. He was a great defensive player. His defense during the 97 championship year and then 98 when they got to the Elite Eight was a key to what they did. So on top of all those things that are on the table with him, he may be a great coach too.
Right. No, I think he's the school leader in steals. I remember writing that story thousands of years ago. And he's a community guy.
And he's just a fun, happy, smiley kind of guy. So I think we're gonna like having him around.
I'm a little upset at him because I had him on the show. I think I told you this right during the NCAA championship game when him and AJ are on the show a day later after they showed it in April. And 3 or 4 days later, I started hearing words that it was going to be him. And he didn't tell me.
Well, again, that's like Greg Byrne didn't tell us about the Alabama game, right? So, you know, these guys, we got to draw them out a little more.
Adia Barnes has been our biggest star.
Adia Barnes, you know, told us, and then Tony Amato, you know, told us, hey, I have a kid. Hey, great. You know, so we got to draw these guys out. We got to figure those things out.
W break news here. I'm not pregnant.
Glad to hear that.
FYI. Hey, let's take a quick break for our last break here on 1030 The Voice.
These days, most families are concerned with having the right insurance coverage. Protecting your family, home, auto, and other valuable possessions can be challenging and sometimes expensive. Crest Insurance gives you flexible options and solutions while saving you money. Insurance is not one size fits all, and at Crest, we find the coverage that's best for you and your family. Visit us online at www.crestins.com or call us toll free at 888-881-5765.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera alongside Jay Gonzalez. Time flies when you're having fun.
It does. It does. And, you know, it's been nice to talk about some basketball. I mean, like things that are may be happening on the court. I feel like, again, we keep having momentum towards the fact that we're actually going to be talking about games sometime in the next few months. So it was nice to be able to
Did you hear the Sean Miller portion when Sean talked about that, when they asked him about, do you think that they're going to have basketball when basketball comes? And what, it's 5 months away. It's about 5 months, a little over 5 months away. It's way too early to tell.
I think both Sean and Adia Barnes have expressed a lot of confidence that their seasons are going to, have a sense of normalcy from the standpoint that, they're going to start when they're supposed to start and those kinds of things. We don't know what it's going to be like in the arena in terms of fans, but, they have a strong belief right now because they haven't, nobody's told them otherwise, that they're not going to be, playing on time.
Right. The one, we need to get Dave Hickey on. I know he had said to me that he wants to be on the show, so we'll get him on time soon.
Sure, sure.
One of the questions I'm curious, if something, it applies to you too. If you're a seasoned football ticket holder, are you going to be allowed to get your season ticket, and are you going to get the same ticket, or are you going to have to be spread out? What have you been told?
What we've been told only is that if you've paid for a ticket and you don't get to go to that game, you get your money back. That's fine with me. I put in my money for my season tickets.
For the whole season?
By June 1st. Well, I took advantage of the 25% payment plan, because what you had to do is pay 25% of your account to hold your tickets for this year. And I did that. And then you paid the rest of it, go along. My 25% included 25% of my tailgate pass. But so I paid for my, I've started the process of paying for my tickets. And again, all they've said is that if you don't get to go to a game, you get your money back. So I don't expect to have a ticket to every game because of, they haven't even decided how many people they're going to let into the stadium and who's going to, and then I'm just going to let it unfold. If they say, okay, you can come to the game, but you've got to go sit over there instead of where you normally sit, then I'm going to go sit over there. So I'm just going to let it happen. I know there's people who want to be assured of, well, if I'm buying a ticket, I want my seat, if I'm buying my ticket, I want to be able to go to every game. You know what, folks, give it up. It's going to be different. We're not going to be able to do it the way we want to do it. You may have a 50-yard line seat this game, and you may be sitting in the end zone the next game. And if that's not good enough for you, then you know what? You're not the fan that we all thought you were. Your 50-yard line seats were just a complete mockery. So get out of here.
This is not Burger King. You cannot have it your way.
Exactly. Everybody's going to have to understand that this season for football and basketball, and you know what? Maybe even baseball.
An aberration.
And softball. I mean, think of Hillenbrand Stadium on a game day. That place is jammed.
With guess what? The age group.
Right.
That's
the at-risk age group. And so, guys, it's going to be different. Just deal with it. Make the best of it. Go to the games that you get to go to. And then, you know what? Watch the other ones on TV.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to be wholly disappointed if they say, you know what? You're not going to the Portland State game. All right. I'm staying home.
I'm at the tailgate. What are you talking about?
I'm staying home. You know, when we tailgate, we bring a TV in the whole bed. Maybe they'll let us come and tailgate and watch it there.
Right. So we'll see.
Look, everybody's just going to have to understand that it's going to be different. And, you know, not everybody's going to get everything that they want.
Yeah, right. Thomas?
It is potentially reassuring news, at least for the spring, is that today Dr. Fauci said that they anticipate having 100 million vaccines ready by early 2021, maybe January of 2021.
Really?
Yes. So what's happening is the trials right now, they're in what's called phase two, which is a smaller control group. Then it enters phase three this summer, which is thousands of people in all age groups. What they're doing is manufacturing this already with the hopes of that it does go through all the testing with a green light. And then as soon as it's approved, they can send out the vaccines that they've already made. And by the end of the year have, his estimate was 100 million vaccines available.
Look at Tom, man, reading the news. Not just the sports stuff.
Dr. Tom. Thank you, doctor.
Yeah, I just play one on the radio.
Thank you, Tom. You've given me hope. But again, you know, even if there is a vaccine, I mean, I still can't imagine that you're going to let 100,000 people into Ohio State Stadium. I just don't.
Right.
I mean, we're not going to be there. This season, I think this whole school year or this whole season through next June
really
is going to be really limited.
Dr. Doom.
No, I'm not saying they're not going to be games. I'm just saying that
it's going to be
they're
altered.
Not going to let 14,000 people into McHale Center.
I get that. Even when the calendar changes, nothing's going to change.
Right.
Because 221, okay, like you're talking about 100 million 2021, it still doesn't kind of change things.
And it's going to be a lot of trial and error. They're going to have to figure out, okay, what works and what doesn't again, and when is it going to happen? But to me, as long as there's games, I'll be good.
Yeah. Is it too late for my snide remark that they weren't letting 14,000 in that arena last year either?
No, but you're right, because it was about 12 and a half or 11. Because you were saying that U of A basketball was not sold out. It wasn't sold out.
They were
of the
advertising
season.
Tickets.
Yeah. Well, they
on
sold
this
out,
radio
but,
station.
But they sold a few games. 14,644, I know, or 544, something like that. That's the number. I don't know why I remember that.
The old gray mare ain't like she used to be.
It's not, and that is true. That, I mean, it's not a sellout every game like it used to be. But you know, that's kind of where sports generally are. You know, there's a lot of people that just stay home and watch the games at home.
And Tucson, you know this better than me, having grown up here. Tucson loves a winner.
They do. And you know what, Sean, he used the phrase return to a high level. He understands and he acknowledges that the last couple of years haven't been vintage Arizona basketball.
Did you see his Zoom with Steve and Matt?
I did.
Both of them?
Yeah.
So he was very self-effacing.
Right.
He even admitted to them it's been not the greatest.
It's been tough. They've had a tough couple of years. He said, and he keeps talking about making it back and returning to where we were.
Right.
So he's acknowledging that, you know, his teams haven't met the quote unquote Arizona standard. Mm-hmm. They haven't been Arizona good the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. But he's also trying to rebuild that. And he's taken a different strategy recruiting wise and all that kind of stuff.
So I had a Zoom meeting with Anthony and my guy Moreno. And I said, maybe we talked about this too. So they have all these kids, six foreigners and a transfer coming in. Last year it was mostly the three good players, and then they had to mesh with the other guys, and it just didn't kind of work. And people are saying, well, they need more time. What makes this year any different that they need more time?
Well, they are going to need more time, especially, but I think there's some things in play that, you know, there aren't going to be some guys there that you're thinking
one and done.
I'm just here for, you know, for the year, and I'm getting out.
I feel like
there's going to, I would expect there to be, mm-hmm. I don't know if I feel like it's going to happen. I would expect there to be more of a long-term commitment to what they're doing, mm-hmm. and maybe some more patience and working with guys and running a system that can work. And yes, you're going to take your lumps and you're going to play some games and you're going to get beat up, but the lessons you learn from that will help you down the road, whether it's this year or next year.
And that's where I wanted to go with it. So you're a fan. I know your family's a fan, and you know a lot of fans. So are you going to sacrifice next year? And not sacrifice is too big of a word, but to wait for the next year?
Well, I'm going to expect them to win this year. Do I expect them to compete for a national championship? No. Do I expect them to compete for a Pac-12 championship? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I expect that Arizona should compete for that every single year. Mm-hmm. So I do expect that. But on the other hand, I think that if you see that there's something happening that leads you to believe that there's a future here, because with when you've got the one and done guys, there is no future.
Right.
It's now. Right now, this has got to happen right now. If it doesn't happen, we're starting over again next year. Mm-hmm. I'm going in with the attitude of these guys are here. They're going to start to hopefully build something. They're going to hang around. Maybe be here another 1 or 2 years after that.
If not more, yes.
Again, because when I think of that Gonzaga team that went to the Final Four, you think of the Virginia team that's the defending champion, Villanova, you know, those couple of years that they won it, they won those games, they won those
older
championships
guys.
With old guys.
Yeah.
Old guys, right, 23-year-old guys. But, you know, to me, there's something to that. And I get it. Kentucky and even Duke to a degree, and some of these teams, they get the one-and-dones and they do well. But I just believe that with what Sean Miller does and the things he does in his program, he needs older guys.
I don't disagree with you there at all. And to argue a little with you, Calipari is, to me, is the most overrated college coach, because he gets those guys. He's won once.
Exactly.
He's won once.
That's my point.
And Coach K, okay, he gets what he gets. He didn't win with the best team 2-3 years ago.
Right.
With the best team.
With the best team.
So
right.
That doesn't work for them either.
So, again, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. I think it's harder to win it all with that team.
I don't disagree.
Than building towards something that you get there little by little and get there.
I totally agree. We'll end it there. Kumbaya, Jay.
Yeah, there you go, man. Fun Kumbaya. Conversation.
Good show today.
I thought it was good.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can keep some of these conversations going.
We got how much time? We got about 20 seconds. So we have a good show tomorrow. AIA high school stuff.
Right.
With the administration. See what's going on
We're
there.
We're talk high schools tomorrow. So we hope people will be listening and calling and ask some questions.
Do you want to tease Thursday?
Not yet.
Okay, we won't.
Not yet.
Okay, tomorrow. Right. We'll tease.
Big day Thursday.
Big day Thursday. Yes. Hey, thanks everybody for listening here on 10:30 The Voice.